And we've reached that point in the story now where the man and his wife have fallen in the garden and sin has come in and paradise has been lost.
Right.
And so he's working his way through what, you know, Freytag's pyramid. And we've looked at the exposition of creation and fall. And now we're going to move to rising action, the movement toward redemption.
Right. It doesn't just stop at Genesis 3. Why are there so many more pages?
Yeah.
Well, good that there is more pages.
That's right.
Usually
because
things,
we need to know the rest of the story.
Yeah.
Right. He says, what unfolds in the rising action of the story is a movement toward redemption. Right. But within that movement are multiple failures. The rise to redemption is a stumbling, bumbling rise toward redemption. Right.
Right.
At least in terms of our side of the story. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
He says we see two trajectories in the Old Testament. One arc foreshadows divine event redemption. That is God's solution to the conflict. And the other arc chronicles Israel's and therefore ours as well. Failure to redeem ourselves.
Right.
Right.
It shows the need for the first prong, which is God, you just need to do this.
Yeah.
So the first glimpse of these two trajectories comes in the immediate aftermath of Adam and Eve's sin. And that's the nice thing about it is, you know, the fall happens. There's the hiding away from God. And ultimately, here's the pronouncement. So to conceal their shame of their nakedness, the couple fashion crude coverings from fig leaves, but the solution is insufficient.
Right. So they try to deal with this themselves.
We've got this.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Hurry up.
Yeah.
Before God
we
sees us.
We can fix this. We can fix it. Right.
Right. He's not going to notice anything different. We just have to do this. Here, we had hoped for Adam to emerge as the comedic hero, but he disappoints. Adam shows that every human attempts to rectify our sin-racked brokenness run headlong into bankruptcy. I've got it. I'll do it myself. It's fine.
Yeah.
I should have just given this over to Dad to cut the straight line. Instead, God meets Adam and Eve's failure by supplying them with adequate garments of skin. The gracious act introduces the notions of atoning blood sacrifices for the first time, prefiguring the means of redemption.
Right. So notice all of this is tied up at the very beginning, right? Our the fall, our attempts to rectify it and our failures. And then God comes in with these garments and covers, right? As a picture to what we'll see in terms of redemption later on, right?
We see it in the Exodus. We see it in the temple ceremonies. We see it at the time and place that Christ is crucified. We see that occurring.
Yeah. So we see this in this book of 66 books by some 40 odd authors, a central theme, a central story that God is working out. It's amazing, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Yeah. So he says the cryptic promise in Genesis 3:15 indicates another hint at where the redemptive trajectory is going. This primordial prophecy indicates that the divine author had already conceived a plot for this story before the foundation of the world, right? Speaking to the serpent, and here's the prophecy here, God says, I will put enmity between you and the woman and between your offspring and her offspring. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel, right? And so Christensen tells us that this verse has been rightly called the proto-evangelium, that is, the first gospel.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, very much so. And using a word picture.
Yeah.
Not just saying there's going to be a guy, he's going to be you know, the second person in the Trinity, he's gonna sacrifice himself for
you're gonna kill him, but he's gonna eventually win, and you know, no.
Yeah,
it's a word picture.
Here's the story.
Yeah.
We have here the first prophetic allusion to the one redemptive comedic hero who will defeat Satan, sin, death, and all other evils. The prophecy is full of irony. Crushing, this bruising is a metaphor for death. The death of the Messiah, the crushing of his heel, is the precise means by which the serpent's skull, Satan, will be crushed for good. Both crushings are fatal, but only one is final. The wound to the heel will recover, an allusion to the Messiah's resurrection. You know, oh, it's on my foot, ouch, darn. Mm-hmm. The wound to the serpent's head will never recover. Right, that's Hebrews 2.
Right. He's going to be utterly defeated. So the failures of mankind, though, continue to plunge as we witness how post-fall sin and alienation precipitate the first murder, right? Cain and Abel. Right? Yeah. Soon a state of anarchy develops. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth and that every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Wow, what a sad commentary. Right. So the judge then, God as judge, unleashes his just wrath by annihilating the creation through a global flood. But to preserve the seed of the woman, which is what he promised he would do, right? That is the promised redemption. He graciously spares Noah.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So, you know, here's a judgment. They're kicked out of the garden. The story doesn't end. And, it, you know, Abel or Cain is aren't the chosen one. Seth becomes, or not becomes, but is the one from that line. And so, you know, why isn't Seth the embodiment of Christ at that point in time? Well, God has other plans to show us that when he says judgment against sin, he's going to show the world reading the story, the judgment of sin, something yeah. so bad that he's required to do drastic, complete action. And that's the flood, but he doesn't take everyone out, even though he could, he has the ability to judge, but what's he doing? He's being true to who his character is, and that's preserving his promise. That covenant that he makes is preserved in the ark, that he closes up, that 2 Peter talks about being in an image of Christ, again, a story for a story, and we see that it's God's character that continues the story, and ultimately, he judges, but he also preserves. Again, this isn't a story of Noah or you know, mankind's story. It involves mankind, but it's ultimately a story of who God is.
Right. It's God's story. Right. Yeah.